All right, we'll call to order the December meeting of the Curie Beach Planning and Zoning Commission. The first item on the agenda is adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Next is the approval of the meeting minutes for our November meeting. So why don't we just take a minute and look at that and see if anybody has any changes. And I believe that Beth has noted that what is presented has the wrong date on it, right? Okay, so that's already been corrected in the minutes that I'll sign.
Put in there.
Yeah, so that's been corrected. All right, is there a motion to adopt the minutes?
You make a motion to adopt the minutes.
Okay, is there a second for that?
Second,
it's been seconded. And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Next item is public comments. Do we have any public comments? We do not. Okay, old business. Presentation by the intern. I don't think we really have a presentation, but just really a quick update as to what our intern is doing. So, yeah, watch it. Go ahead.
So based on my presentation last month, it sounded like the town's been doing quite a lot in terms of the marine things. So what I've done is I'm kind of conducting like a marine audit of the town now. So I've already spoke with John and I've spoken with Nikki, the director of the Parks and Recreation Department. And yesterday I just met with Dennis, the chair of the Shoreline Access and Beach Protection Committee. So right now I'm kind of just making pretty much just a comprehensive list of everything that the town is doing, and then I'm hoping to have a report done by February.
Okay. So you're looking at what we're doing and then, you know, looking at what some other communities are doing, then you're going to kind of put them together and maybe give us some recommendations.
Yeah, identify where there are some gaps.
Okay. Yeah, based upon our discussion last time, I think there was a feeling that we were doing some of the stuff, and so you're doing a what could be described as a green audit right now of the community, talking to different commissions and people and stuff like that. Okay. Any quick comments? All right. Well, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Next item is the graffiti ordinance. I would like to postpone that to our next meeting. Again, I'm sure as everybody realizes, this is our last week of classes and finals week, so I'm just not prepared to bring
table.
That for us. So, okay, it's been motioned to table. Is there a second for that?
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. In new business, accept Robert Young's resignation from the P&Z Commission. Is there, I guess, you know, this is usually a consent agenda item, but I guess we have to have a formal motion on this. So I'll move to accept. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Next item is interviewing the alternate, and we have two applicants here, Mr. Robert Rhodes and Ms. Kathleen Zielinski. Just before we get started, I'm sure as everybody realizes, this may be more of a benefit for the folks that are interviewing. About 3 or 4 years ago, the town council established a procedure where we have the commission members and then we have an alternate who's expected to kind of come to the meetings and that sort of thing. The alternate is actually sworn in when they become an alternate. So if somebody does leave, and we just had somebody leave, actually, Robert Young, and that's why we have now our alternate as a member right there. So it's a natural transition to kind of come in. So now that we have an open space for the alternate, that's what we're interviewing with. The alternate will ultimately have to be approved by the town council. So we do the interviews, make a recommendation, and the town council officially does approve the alternates too. Yes. So with that, these have to be in public hearings, these interviews. That was explained to us by our council. We used to do them in private, but now we have to do them in public, and so that's what we're going to do. So anyway, Mr. Rhodes, Probably want to kind of just stand up there, introduce yourself, and maybe just give us a little bit of a kind of a background and why you may be interested in P&Z, and then we'll open it up to the commission here to maybe ask any questions.
Okay. My name is Robert Rhodes. I live at 117 4th Avenue North. I've been in Curie Beach for almost a year and a half now. And I spent about 20-some years as a project manager at a company in Pennsylvania, where I'm from. And the name of the company is Gytronics Corporation. They make industrial communications equipment. Prior to that, I was a sales consultant, and prior to that, I was a system engineer. I spent most of my working life there at Gytronics, 37 years, till they gave me an offer I couldn't refuse. And I saw the announcement that you had an opening, and I thought I would apply and see if I can help to improve the community and offer any input that might be relevant.
Okay, so you've lived here about a year and a half then, right?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Well, let me open it up to the commission members if you have any questions, or Mr. Rhodes.
When you say you're a system engineer, does that mean you have an engineer degree or just...
I have a Bachelor of Science in Electronic Engineering Technology.
Okay, thank you.
Now, where'd you get that from?
At the time I graduated, it was called Capital Institute of Technology.
Okay.
And I believe they've changed their name several times now, and I think they're now Capital Technical University.
Okay.
Is that in Pennsylvania also?
No, that's in Beltsville, Maryland area.
Okay.
When you were, you said you were project manager for several years. What exactly were your duties?
My duties were to review specifications and quotations, purchase orders, compare them all, make sure that what the customer said they were purchasing is what we offered to them. And then I also worked with various departments in the company, accounting, production, engineering, to make sure that the project stayed on time and within budget.
So I understand that the project was an internal, you're building something internally?
Yes, okay. It would have been an order for a communications system for possibly an offshore oil platform.
You know, you've lived here for about a year and a half. You know, planning and zoning is, you know, does planning and zoning. You know, I mean, trying to, you know, the reason it looks like it currently looks in Curie Beach is largely to the type of ordinances and the effort of P&Z and then approved by the town council. Do you have any ideas about what you would like to see improved in Curie Beach that maybe a P&Z or town council could do better than what we're doing right now, having come from someplace else and kind of a new resident here?
No, at this point, I don't really have any opinions on what needs to be changed or could be changed.
So you're pretty happy here right now?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I'd like to ask about something on the application, and it may just be that I'm not reading it correctly, or it may just be that it's not there. But at the bottom where it says what days or times, are you unable to attend meetings? You've got Monday through Thursday from 5 to 8 as being unable to attend meetings. So is that a mistake? Or?
Yes, that would be a mistake.
Okay. Because that would eliminate you if that were the case.
Yeah. I am able to attend any meetings in the evenings.
Okay.
Currently, any time on Friday. I do have a part-time job driving a bus for retirement communities.
So it's before 5 p.m. that you're unable, not after 5 p.m.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
thank you.
There's some flexibility in the schedule. So if there are meetings other times, I can usually adjust the schedule that I could attend.
Okay. Have you been involved in you know, either at your previous location, Pennsylvania, or here, in any other volunteer type of activities related to the city, you know, like any committees or commissions or anything like that?
No, I haven't.
So this is your first
yes.
interest in doing this, okay.
I have a question on
sure.
One of your comments was areas of concerns or areas of interest, keeping a small town feel while finding ways to promote economic growth. Do you have thoughts or in a year and a half here what you thought you liked about the area or what we could do better?
Well, I really like the area because it is the full-time residents here are a pretty close-knit community, and but I do see some storefronts that are vacant and could be utilized to generate income for the town, as well as attract more people.
Okay.
Other than that, I have nothing specific in mind.
I mean, we're essentially built out as a community, so, you know, it's a matter of kind of improving. You don't have large tracts of land here, you know, where, you know, the developers will come in and build another 300 houses or something like that. I mean, we're, you know, we do have bits and pieces of lots available, and, you know, but it's a kind of a different feel of maintenance and improvement rather than development, I think, you know, in terms of what we're doing. So, are there any other questions?
No.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, and then our next applicant is Ms. Kathleen Zielinski. Again, same thing, want you to kind of introduce yourself and give us a little bit of background.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Zielinski. Do I need to introduce myself?
Yeah,
I guess
for
the record.
It's on record.
I live at 714 Settlers Lane, have lived there for 5 years. When I first moved here to Kerry Beach, I applied and was accepted to the Kerry Beach Community Center as a member, and I worked there as a volunteer until I was hired into the building inspections department as assistant to John Batson. And in my role there, I was secretary to the planning and zoning and the clerk for the Board of Adjustment, and now that I'm away from town employment, I saw this opportunity to come back and volunteer in this position, and I thought, well, I have background in that, and that could be a way that I can help to contribute to the town, if you'll have me. I've always volunteered everywhere I lived, and it's just part of what I do, so this was an opportunity that came up, and so I applied.
Okay. Well, I'll ask the same question, which is kind of interesting. Now that you're no longer employed by the town, you can be honest. what would you see as areas that could be improved here in Kerry Beach?
I think that the town is doing a great job, actually. Nothing comes to mind right now. I think that things are, I know you started to develop the historic district. I don't know how that's been going. And if I'm lucky enough to be appointed alternate, I, you know, get back in the fray of things and catch up on what's been going on. But I think the town looks beautiful. I think you guys are doing a good job on planning and zoning. Council's doing a great job. And I just don't really have anything.
Nothing bugs you here, huh?
Nothing bugs me.
No, no lights. I mean, bright lights, you know, or anything like that.
Oh, yeah, I know. I heard about that. Yeah. Actually, there is a street light right in front of my house that is too bright.
Actually, we have five of them. That,
I was wondering if I could call Duke and ask him to put a different bulb in because it shines right in my living room. No, really. No. I think, yeah. I'm
okay.
Very happy.
All right.
And I, Kathleen, I'm sure you support the 35-foot maintaining that.
Of course, yes.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I have no questions.
You have no questions? No, no, no questions. Okay. Boy, everybody seems to like us. I'm just trying to think of, you've already covered some of my questions that I was going to ask. Anybody else? Now, how long have you lived here?
5 years.
Five years. And where did you come from?
I came directly, indirectly, I came from New York. I was born in New York. But my most recent residence before here was in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
But I lived in Maryland and Pennsylvania, New York, Texas.
Traveled a lot, okay.
Yeah, lived around. I got a lot of good experiences around the country.
No plans to move again? Found home?
This is it.
How about timing? You know, that's a question we always ask too, because again, we do have an attendance requirement on the commission. You probably heard that generally we meet on the first Wednesday.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, and but sometimes we change.
Uh-huh.
And we're being a little stricter on our attendance requirement right now. So you feel pretty comfortable about being able to meet the meetings and stuff like that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
No problem.
Okay. All right, well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, so we will have to kind of have a vote later. Probably do that as our last agenda item, I think, to make a recommendation to the council. But we'll put that at the last part of our meeting tonight. Okay. All right. Next person is a light pollution ordinance and dark sky regulations.
Okay. I had a funny comment on that happened this morning, but I'm actually going to request that we table that till next month. I received a presentation from darksky.org that will help explain what that's all about. However, it's some 80-something pages long, and I'd like to pare that down and review it before presenting it to the before presenting it to the commission. But just to reinforce why it's so important, I was in the coffee shop here on the island this morning listening to somebody saying how much they needed their coffee because the lights outside the rental house they were in woke them up at 3 o'clock this morning and he thought the sun was up. So it kind of just goes to show why this is important. But I would ask that we table that for next month.
Second.
Okay. Any future discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Okay. Legislative update and recommendations by Mr. Eldridge.
Thank you, Chairman. Not too much to report. It's a work in progress. Council approved B, D, and C, this commission and your attorney to move forward with reviewing the legislative changes that are currently effective and the new Chapter 160D, which will become effective a year from this January. Given the authorization on the 20th and the Thanksgiving holidays, I've only just begun to review Part one, which are the current changes. There's probably three or four that concern us that are relevant to look at, and I need to cross-check the code to see if there are any amendments necessary for that. I'm not aware of any current applications where these new changes would impact. So it's a work in progress. I'll bring back a more detailed report and recommendations on the part one, the currently effective legislative updates. I'll also mention that, and I guess it's because of the new Chapter 160D, these legislative changes are not as simple as they used to be. The language is pretty complicated to wade through. But we'll take a look at it in the next 30 days, figure out if there are any code amendments necessary to conform the code to this four or five currently effective changes, and if so, I'll make those recommendations and proceed as instructed.
Okay. Well, one question I had is that we keep kind of putting this off, but we've had several discussions about how we need to change activities or the businesses that are allowed in the various districts because of the court case.
You're talking about supplementing the provision in the zoning chapter of prohibited uses.
Right, the prohibited uses. And the language that we need to make that consistent so we can, because right now our language is not enforceable.
We have eliminated the problematic language and we are effectively using that provision of prohibited uses. We're okay with respect to the legal ruling that upset the apple cart. We're okay in that regard. The point that you've made consistently over the past few months is adding to that list of prohibited uses.
Right now, because right now, if it's not identified, the assumption is it can be.
That is correct.
So, versus before, where if it wasn't identified with the language that we had, the assumption is that it couldn't be allowed. It was restricted.
For the benefit of those that weren't part of the original discussion in the public, it used to be in zoning ordinances that there would be a provision saying if it's not expressly covered in the table of uses, it's prohibited. 2016, the Supreme Court invalidated that language. To the effect that if it's not in the table of uses, it's not only not prohibited, it's allowed. And I recently used that Supreme Court ruling in Wilmington, where the New Hanover County Superior Court reversed a decision, a Board of Adjustment decision. So, because Wilmington still had that voided catch-all provision, they had never corrected their ordinance with respect to the same, and I used it against them and won that case. So in that regard, we're okay, but you're absolutely right. You need to be proactive in determining what uses you may want to add to your list of prohibited uses.
Right. This is leading up to a discussion. Was there any indication in these new changes put together by the legislature, the 160s, that are relevant to that, or is that kind of a separate issue that we need to kind of, in parallel, kind of push ahead on?
I give you a couple of responses, general and vague. First response, I've not looked at 160D yet. That's part two. That's what I call part two of this 128-page legislative session law. Part one are the four or five currently effective changes. Part two is the new chapter effective a year from now. I've not gotten into that since I'm focused on part one. There's nothing in part one that raises that issue. Part one, the three or four things that part one concerns itself with is something called permit choice. If I'm an applicant and I get an approval and council changes the law on me, I get a choice whether I want to go with that new law or stay with the old that I got my approval under. Another change is that where all zoning, code enforcement, zoning interpretation, zoning decisions, they were always an administrative appeal of those would always go to the Board of Adjustment. The legislature has now defined some criteria where, for example, if I'm the recipient of an interpretation by John Batson, I could go to the Board of Adjustment, but if I feel it involves a taking issue or impacts on a vested right, and there's two or three other conditions, I can go directly to Superior Court and bypass the Board of Adjustment. Related to that, another change is the awarding of attorney's fees, in some cases mandatory, but for the prevailing party in cases where the municipality has been named as a party. So John Smith versus Kerry Beach, if Kerry Beach wins, they can ask for attorney's fees, vice versa. So that changes the calculations quite a bit. There's one other change that escapes me at the moment. Something about, it's not clear to me based on the wording of the statute, but there are situations where you can where council, in approving a zoning matter, can establish certain conditions. For example, special use permit. When council grants a special use permit, they are allowed to impose additional conditions that are reasonably related to the topic matter of that permit. There's a new law that's currently effective. They don't use the word special use permit. They call it a special use district. And I've got to figure out if they actually are talking about special use permits. But regardless, what the new law says is that in those instances, you actually need the written consent of the applicant before those conditions can be imposed. And that's really the handful of changes that are currently effective, so I don't think it impacts on your prohibited use listing. But it is something that we still need to look at the code to see if we need to tweak the language in the code relative to those matters.
So, you know, I would say, based upon what you've talked about, that the commission has really, you know, obviously to conform our regulations and our code now to these changes, both the immediate changes and the ones that need to be implemented within a year, as well as look at this whole issue of allowable and prohibited uses that we need to, you know, because again, we're concerned about what the community looks like and maintaining the community. So the fact is that if we don't prohibit it, somebody could come in and do something that we may not want. I think that's a serious issue.
Yeah. And it's a challenge to have that vision, that proactive vision. You did it with container homes. We did it with something else too. I don't recall what it was, but we were proactive in that, or you all were, yeah. And council.
Yes, at least four members of the council.
Well, I'm starting to remember what it was.
We're going to readdress it.
What was that? Oh, okay.
The shipping container holds.
Something
else.
Not again.
So, are there? Oh, yeah. And you know, when you're also looking at this and coming back, you know, again, we're pushing forward on the historic preservation district. Can you also look and see if any of these changes will affect that? Because that technically is an overlay district, and see if they address the issue of overlay districts.
There are one or two, and I believe they're in Chapter 160D. That impacts both the PCC and the HPC.
Okay.
There definitely are. There's also, related to that, and that some of these may be current, but doesn't involve you yet because you're not doing quasi-judicial functions as an HPC. You're not there yet. Quasi-judicial being an application for a COA. But there are changes to the underlying statute that controls quasi-judicial proceedings, so that'll have to be addressed at some point in time. But right now, it's not anything we need to be concerned about. But it's one of the matters that I'll be looking at and reporting back on next month.
Okay, good.
Mr. Chair, the prohibitive use and the positive identification of those, is that something I know we got a lot on our plate. I don't want to complicate it anymore, but is that something that we should move together with the district, that we make sure that's updated?
I personally think it's very important. Yeah. It's just that, as you said, we have a lot of things on our plate, and we're all volunteers, so it's going to take somebody to actually look at these and actually maybe bring forward, I don't know, maybe if somebody wants to volunteer, possibly.
What I would suggest is, well, first of all, I think you were kind of asking that question in the context of a historic district.
Right.
And again, the answer would be no, because the eventual design guidelines
would take care of that.
Would take care of
that. Okay.
Right.
So then we don't have to talk about
what I'd encourage all of you.
But if I could jump in, the COA is a design guideline, it's not a use. I don't think that in the historic district you would have uses associated with that. It's more of a design guideline. So it is there is an overlap.
The underlying district would control the use, you're right.
Yeah.
So if you had
So we still need to do this in spite of having a historic district, because that's a more of an architectural design guideline, but not a use guideline in the historic district, from what I understand.
And I would say it's more of a zoning district issue instead of the overlay.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
But what Chairman suggested some time ago, which I thought was a good idea, which may be a way you want to proceed, is just take a few minutes and or keep a little notebook if you think of something, write it down. If you learn of some upcoming trend that you think should be considered to be added to the list, write it down. And bring those lists back up every, month or two from now, and see if we can supplement them.
Of things we want to have prohibited. So I would recommend that, one, we put this on the agenda as a formal agenda item for our next meeting.
I agree.
And then the second thing is recommend maybe that the commission look at the, because each one of the zoning districts has a different set of prohibited and allowable uses, you know, within it. And maybe we ought to refamiliarize ourselves with that and then say, well, you know, because some of them, you know, I mean, there's a lot of districts that we don't want to have things in it, and we kind of had a catch-all that if it wasn't allowable, it was prohibited. But now, you know, people could come in and put a lot of interesting things in a lot of our districts.
Should we break this up and
this
all of us pay attention to R1 for the next section and make it into a series
of exotic birds?
Yes, right. I remember that. Yeah, the chickens and the birds and stuff.
And the lions and tigers.
The council thing is that, for at least for this iteration, to get us going, is that we all come back with like vape.
Your wish list.
Yeah, your wish list. We want vape has it.
Okay.
And in the residential district, do we, you know, what we did, you don't want anything but residents. But if can you put like a list of 10 things and say that are prohibited? And said, this also goes to R1. I mean, can you do it that way, or does each?
The provisions labeled prohibited uses, I don't see any reason why you couldn't
list
a prohibited use that was only applicable to a particular district.
Okay.
You know, maybe, because the interesting thing about residential is that, you know, typically in a residential, what we've allowed is that maybe a very limited sort of thing, like a home consulting business and things like that within a residential district. What I'm kind of struggling to get my hands around is that with this new ruling now, does that mean somebody could come in? Because, you know, again, we only have in a residential district maybe 6 allowable uses, and the assumption that if it wasn't on there, it was prohibited. Now, in a residential area, do we have to have the whole long list of things now that aren't allowed in that particular, like a barbershop? You know, can somebody set up a barbershop now in an R1 district?
Yeah, in a garage.
In a garage.
The analysis would be as follows. You look at the R1 permitted uses, and if commercial uses aren't there, well, that answers that question. The other analysis you would. So if you have R1, you look at R1. If there aren't any distance.
Well, we do allow businesses in R1.
Yeah.
We do allow businesses in R1s and R2s.
The proactive approach requires you to be fairly detailed
about prohibited uses. Okay.
The other thing you'd have to look at is how home occupations are, I think you all call them home occupations. You got to look at how you're going to handle that. I've never worked with that in Perry Beach, but that's another thing you have to look at in analyzing particular uses in particular districts.
Right. Okay. Well, let's put it on the agenda for next, and everybody bring a list, and we may want to look at that. I can kind of maybe identify maybe 300 or 400 different businesses, and then having a table that says this is prohibited and this is allowed specifically in each one of the districts on this very, very big table in order to deal with this particular issue.
I will say this about Perry Beach. I look at a lot of zoning regulations for a variety of reasons on a continuing basis. This is the only municipality that I'm aware of that has been correct and proactive regarding the ability to regulate prohibited uses.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions or comments regarding?
We don't need a motion for that.
No, I don't. This is just an update here. And okay, next agenda item. Thank you. I think that's. But you might stay.
I'm gonna handle the next one.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. Right of way obstruction. Who wants to get us started on this?
I will.
Okay.
First of all, I want to thank council because I sent him something in the last minute, and he was good enough to actually get these two things for us. Can you pull those up, those pictures? Oh.
Well, you mean the actual?
Yeah. What this came about was we had a meeting of the parking committee, and John Batson brought up an issue that is becoming more of a concern with him with blockading the right-of-way. And there was this first picture shows a what by ordinance is what a right-of-way should look like. It's the fence is on the property line, and the area between the property line is the either right-of-way or the public right-of-way. I got another example of the same thing. So they are well within the guidelines for the ordinance. Now we go. Now you see one. This gentleman had put a series of boulders in the right of way to obstruct people from parking in his right of way. As a note, these have subsequently been taken away since I took the pictures. I don't know if John has got to them. Okay, another. So both of those rocks. There's another instance where these are, and you can see those three stakes. Those are like snow stakes up north that people are putting in the public right-of-way to block. Go ahead, do the next one. There's on the corner.
Now why are they doing this?
The ones on the corner are blocking. Well, go back to the other one.
Because people can't park on the right-of-way.
You can if it's yours.
If it's yours, if it's somebody else. Who are they trying to keep?
It's.
They're trying to keep, around construction.
Construction.
Construction vehicles from putting two tires there, which they should be ticketed for.
Yeah.
I've recognized some of the holes we're talking about. 23 letters have gone out, certified letters have gone out about this issue, and we are beginning to get pushed back now.
Okay.
All right. So go ahead. Yeah, that one is there so people don't cut down the grass if they turn the corner, is what I'm thinking. That's the only thing I think of. Go ahead, and next one. There's those stakes again. They're lined up in front of the whole house. Now there is, as you can probably tell from the tire marks, there's a construction place right across the street, and so they're doing that. And I think one or two more. Oh, those are that's just stakes lined up along the whole property line to keep people off. But anyway, you get the kind of and here's one. Now this is where when you start getting into this. This one where the person has taken their landscaping all the way to the road, and actually there's about a 8 or 9 inch rock wall that is right there. So that is, and that as you drive through town, you see a lot of those where they have just gone completely into the right of way, and I mean that's a lot of stuff. If maintenance had to be done, if power line, I mean, it's just not supposed to be there like that. And this is one, I put this here, and I think this is one where we may be able to, if it's ground level, mulch or rock, the one plant shouldn't be there, then that might be, I haven't talked to John about this, so I don't know what his feelings on it. I was hoping he's going to be here tonight. So that is what he's up against. He didn't tell me the letters had been sent, so that's good. But what he wants us to do is on the ordinances is try to tighten up the two pieces of paper you have. Go ahead. Yeah.
Mr. Richardson has identified the problems. To sum those up, it is the parking of vehicles in the talking residential parking where our regulations allow the property owner to park on the unpaved portion or the shoulder, if you want to call it, of the right-of-way in front of their residence. Point one. Point two, two problems are emerging. Vehicles parking in those spaces that are not the owner's vehicles, construction and maintenance vehicles being a good example, and the really good pictures you had of the barricading and the roping off.
Yeah.
So there was some suggestion about how to handle that, and Mr. Richardson actually drafted a right-of-way definition.
This came from a municipal website. I'm not that smart to write something like that.
Let's start with the piece of paper that's got the red ink on it. And if you go down to the middle where in bold it says public right-of-way, it provides a definition, and then it provides some detailed regulations underneath that regulation. For example, the public has the right to travel unhindered over an ROW. I think John's comments are in red. Does not think this is necessary, and I agree with that assessment. Second one, ROW does not have to be at ground level, talking about utilities and things like that. Again, I agree with John. I don't think that's necessary. I do think that council may want to more expressly provide for a prohibition against obstructions, including barricading, roping, within the right-of-way. But I don't think we need to include it in this right-of-way language. I point these things out so that if you turn to the black and white page, which is labeled ROW obstructions on top of, I point out that we already have a definition for right-of-way. Number two, I point out that in 1302.60, we have a provision about removing obstructions and encroachment, and these are direct quotes in 1 and 2 from your code, and you'll notice in 2, starting on the second line, the references to streets. So if you know the issues from the red line document, and you know these provisions in this black line document that I've just walked through, and let's jump down to 3, where some initial observations are set forth. I mentioned that these two provisions can be tweaked for greater clarity, such as, for example, including a reference to property lines in the definition for a public right-of-way. I'm talking about a one-line insertion that establishes that your property line does not run to the pavement, something right. Like those lines. More importantly, in 1302.60, I suggest including substituting public right-of-way for streets, making a reference to Chapter 10's definition of a public right-of-way, and include in that provision express provisions against obstructing, including barricading and roping. Don't put it in the ROW definition. Put it where it fits in 1302.60. Which segues my point under C, recommend against regulating in the definitions themselves, definitions define and do not regulate. That case I mentioned earlier that I had the victory in, that was another one of my arguments. They were relying on definitions to regulate, and they didn't regulate, and the judge agreed with that. And my last point, C goes on to say, go back up to B, which I forgot. The other issue regarding ROW is non-residential owner vehicles parking in the unpaved portion of the ROW in front of their house. Don't think we need to provide for that. I think Councilman Whitley hit it on the head. They're parking illegally based on Chapter 10's parking regulations, and then you can enforce that by ticketing those vehicles. So if you beef up 1302.60, you can address the concerns that were well illustrated in Mr. Richardson's photographs. If you enforce Chapter 10 against those non-owner vehicles parking in the residential shoulders of the right-of-way, you can deal with that issue and you give a little more clarity in the definition of ROW so that people understand that their property doesn't run to the street. That's my suggestions. My quick takeaway from all this.
One other point that I should have made from the beginning, the mayor was also part of the parking thing, and I sent these to him, and he actually wrote back that he was in favor of strengthening this. He would put this to council. So.
Would it make sense that we take the lead on this and ask Mr. Eldridge to draft what he would see would be the appropriate amendments to 130260 and then present that to council? Or do you think council would want to deal with this directly? So to have us present it then? Okay.
Give us some other options.
Okay.
So we could approach this as a text amendment to the parking regulations and to Chapter 10 and Chapter 13. You all would review and report, and council would take act, consider an act. Yeah, I could bring the revisions next month if you want.
Okay. So, I mean, if that's okay, does that sound good that, you know, based upon what you said, to make those...
The only caveat is John's not here, and I would want him to, before we even brought here, to have him look at it to make sure, since he's the one who brought the issue on.
It looks like a pretty clear issue. I'm sorry to jump in.
I'll figure out how to deal with that.
Okay.
Can you put together a proposed... changes to the two chapters, Chapter 13 and Chapter 10. You're not going to recommend any changes to Chapter 10, but the Chapter 13. And then send that to John to get any feedback from John prior to our next meeting?
I could. I think that introduces, you know, again, there are second steps that's not necessary.
I'll withdraw mine.
You all will do a report if needed.
Yeah.
First of all, I've taken his comments into consideration.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the recommendations I've made, I think, are consistent with those comments.
I agree.
If he has any changes, he can bring that up during the review and report. If there are any revisions to be made based on those before we pass them on to council, we would entertain a motion to pass it on to council, revise this.
Okay. All right.
I was going deep. So, if the motion is for me to proceed along the way that I've recommended, I think we all agree on the 130260 changes. Yeah. And if we go this route, that's the way I'll proceed. I'm not going to look at anything else. Query, do you want me to add a line to the Chapter 10 ROW definition with referencing property lines so that people understand that they're property does not run to the edge of the pavement?
I would like that.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
The only other issue is that do we need to have a positive statement on construction and maintenance and lawn vehicles? That seems to be...
My analysis on that,
yeah.
The only people that can park in the residential unpaid ROW are the owners.
I'm talking more about... I don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, yeah.
Now, the other point that we didn't cover, there was some discussion about adding these type of regulations, or in addition to 10 and 13, adding something like this to 15. 15 is zoning, and owners don't have any responsibilities other than not to obstruct it over an ROW, so I don't think it's a zoning matter. I think it's a Chapter 13 and a Chapter 10 matter, not a Chapter 15 matter.
Okay, so I would recommend that the P&Z attorney make appropriate amendment or recommended amendments to Chapter 10 and Chapter 13 regarding our discussion on right-of-way.
I second it.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, excellent. Thank you. All right, rescheduling January 1st meeting. I think there was, make a motion that we reschedule our January 1st meeting to January 14th.
Second.
At 7 o'clock? Okay, second. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Last agenda item, which is not on here, but we do have to make a recommendation to the council regarding the alternate member. Does anybody want to kind of start the discussion on that?
No, I think I thank the gentleman for coming, but Kathleen has a lot of experience with us and a lot of time in the city, so, and with other organizations. So.
Okay, you know, I would agree, and again, Mr. Rhodes, I mean, it's great, you know, I mean, certainly if you're interested in P&Z, there's regular turnover, so I would strongly recommend that you stay connected, and there are a lot of different commissions and committees. If you want to be involved in, you know, making the city better and the town better, there's always vacancies on a variety of different committees here. And that's a good way to get started, because most of the people on the P&Z have probably already been on some other commission or committee to be involved and so forth. But, you know, I know the town is always looking every single month to have, you know, members on various committees. And I think that's posted too, isn't it? Everything's posted online for that. So I would, you know, recommend. So again, I would recommend Ms. Zielinski. So, is there any further discussion? All right, so somebody want to make a motion?
Make a motion to, what's the right way to word this?
Forward
Kathleen's nomination to council for the planning and zoning alternate.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, all right, so I will present that at the council meeting along with our recommendation and our update regarding, well, actually not part of P&Z, but as regarding the historic district, and just keep the council updated, but also recommend the alternate.
Okay.
Any member items? Nope, none. All right, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, very good, thank you.
Awesome.